Roger Kane Light Company versus Roger Bigney, Tax Commissioner, Justice Cook, and has recused himself in this case, so he's got sitting in place of Justice Cook, and William Harsh, Judge of Appeals, sitting in the court district. Welcome.
Thank you, Chief.
Thank you. And please, the court, with me today are, in addition to co-counsel, Mr. Fred Livingston, counsel for the Cuyahoga County Auditor, and legal school board, Assistant Prosecutor James Dugan, and Lake County Counsel for Amicus Lake County Auditor, and Amicus Ohio School Boards Association, and Amicus Representative Jamie Callender of the Ohio General Assembly. The issue is, in this case, is what brings all of us here to the court. The main issue is whether Section 5727.11e, the Ohio Revised Code, which mandates evaluation of an electric company's production equipment at 50% of its capitalized cost, will be given effect or rendered meaningless. The impact of this issue goes far beyond Kane's case. Present time, the tax department has estimated over $1.5 billion in taxes riding on similar claims by electric companies in this bid. And the damage and the potential harm goes beyond that, because beyond the dollars in issue, the case jeopardizes the General Assembly's ability to enact legislation, plain legislation on its face, with any hope that it will be given effect. And the ability of the school board and other local taxing authorities in the state to rely on that type of legislation and planning their budgets. The statute in issue 5727.11e states in clear and unambiguous terms that the true value of production equipment is the equipment's cost and capitalized on the company's books and records, less 50% of that cost as an allowance for depreciation and obsolescence. This statutory mandate, which is different from other statutes that this court has seen, was enacted in 1988 by amendment substitute Senate Bill 449 at the urging of Kane Light's partners in the peri-nuclear power plant.
So that we can understand how that works. So the moment that property is placed into service, that the point of tax basis. At what point does it become taxed to property?
It becomes taxed to property for a particular tax year in business. If it was being used in business on the tax listing date for that year, which was December 31st of the preceding calendar year.
So the moment it is used in business, it's taxed at 50% of its cost.
Correct. That is the valuation,
and it is taxed at 50% of the cost of the schedule. It's brand new, and when it's 2 years old.
Correct.
So what it says it was.
And that was done specifically for the, because the peri-nuclear power plant, when it came online in November of 1987, it was approved for operation. Operation commenced, so that on December 31st, 1987, it became taxable for the 1988 tax year. Now, what happened in 1988, the tax commissioner sent agents out to conduct an evaluation of the plant, of the production equipment, annual personal property at the plant. Based on the procedure that had been used prior to that under earlier law, which had been the subject of appeals to this court in Hansdorian versus Lindley and Snyder versus Limbaugh, the tax commissioner considered the 50% formula that was normally used, but under old law, that formula had been sustained subject to adjustment for special circumstances. In fact, what had happened in one case involving Ohio Valley Electric Company later in the 80s, that had very old property and it was valued substantially lower than 50%. The first the point that happened with Perry in the summer of 1988, the tax commissioner went up because it was brand new, had announced a tentative valuation of 95% of its cost. Following that, an indicated at the urging of Sheriff Harvis, the General Assembly in the fall of 1988 enacted Senate Bill 449.
And it was not prior to the property being placed.
So that was after it was placed in service. It had been operating since the previous fall, but 88 was the first year for which assessment, the property was going to be assessed. The assessments go out under Ohio law in the fall of that year, based on the report filed that spring.
New law was in effect for the first window of taxation.
Correct. What happened was that tax commissioner then went, had to go back and recalculate that. The assessments were issued that fall, and that became the basis for the tax that was levied and collected by the various local authorities. The collections always trail the following year. A bill will go out usually in December.
So how did that BCA go wrong?
Okay. The BCA went wrong simply because it took this very simple and straightforward formula. Cost is capitalized on the books and records. And there was no dispute in this case. These were the costs capitalized on their books and records as overhead costs of taxable production equipment.
But haven't you forgotten a step in this process? Isn't it the first step definitional? Don't you have to characterize the property as being taxable, tangible, personal property before you get to the valuation question?
Yes.
And this case turns on whether or not we're dealing with a definition or whether we're dealing with applying a mathematical formula for valuation, doesn't it?
Yes.
I mean, you want to characterize everything simply as a valuation problem.
And the
company wants to characterize everything as a definitional problem, correct?
And where the issue arises, Judge Hersha, is because these costs, in enforcing this statute, the tax commissioner was required to prescribe forms in which the taxpayer would report the cost of its production equipment. Now, when the General Assembly enacted this statute, and we had it in the record, the Legislative Service Commission report that followed this legislation all the way through the General Assembly. It was aware, and the reason it was due to the simple valuation statute, and it wasn't enacted as that, was that these are electric companies, at the time very regulated companies, which keep their books in accordance with regulations of the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, FERC, and if a resource in Ohio, those accounts are applied by PUCO or adopted by PUCO. Now, the tax commissioner prescribed returns that required the taxpayer to report the costs of different kinds of property. He used the same accounting system. We're talking about accounts 322, 323, 324, and 325. The taxpayer admitted that the cost that is booked to those accounts were the costs that were booked in accordance with FERC rent. And the rents for those accounts, in defining those accounts, define tangible assets of production equipment. Reactor equipment, turbine equipment, miscellaneous equipment, and accessory electric equipment. Those are the four accounts. And they define it very specifically. And so the tax commissioner asks, requires the utilities to report the cost of that equipment. And that's what they do. And if there's a question about any of the costs, they can produce a set of accounts that show that, no, in fact, some of the costs, we have a sub-account. We have an account for drugs. We have an account for some sort of other type of property. But they indicated in this case, they admitted in this case, that they booked all of their capitalized costs, either direct costs or overhead costs.
But they argue that they're not bound by FERC. That Ohio is not done. Isn't that their argument?
We're not saying that FERC binds people as a matter of law. What we're saying is that
it's easier to follow. It's easier to follow.
Not just easier.
If we just use FERC, then we're okay. It's easier.
No. What we're saying is that the statute requires us to use capitalized costs. That's what the statute requires. And the factual basis determining what those capitalized costs represent, entirely appropriate to look to FERC. When the taxpayer says that it states that it's caught that we capitalized in accordance with FERC. Our reference to FERC is on for a factual finding, based on factual findings. When they say these costs were put into these accounts in accordance with FERC regulation, it's entirely appropriate to look at FERC regulation booking these costs to those accounts. And that's what the tax commissioner asked the Board of Tax Appeals. The Board of Tax Appeals, as you noted, said we're not bound by it. We're not arguing that they're bound by it by a matter of law. All they're bound by is what the booking records say. We're saying it's entirely appropriate to look per regulation if, in fact, the taxpayer has stated that it maintains its books in accordance with those regulations. So,
can we look, can we put this in some context and look at the issue of the drawings? That's a definitional problem initially, is it not? Do the drawings fit the definition of taxable personal property? Isn't there a specific...
Drawings are exempt tangible personal property.
By definition.
By definition.
Correct.
So
you don't get the valuation in that question, correct?
If you've identified any of these costs. Our point of the tax commissioner in this case, is they have never identified these costs as being capitalized costs of drawings or any other exempt property. Take a look at in supplement volume 15, contains our exhibit E, which is the final cost report that was distributed to all the partners. It takes each of these accounts and it breaks down by retirement unit the direct cost and the indirect cost, the overhead distributable cost, which includes engineering services, the cost that they claim produced raw. They have booked those costs and spread them out over tangible items, production equipment, or components of those items, production equipment. They are, in fact, part of the distributable or overhead costs of that tangible equipment. And if there's any doubt about it, it should be resolved by the fact that they themselves had absolutely no problem with treating those distributable costs as costs of tangible equipment when that equipment was exempt as a pollution control system. They had absolutely no trouble whatsoever in characterizing these overhead costs that they now want to drop. In fact, in their final miscellaneous report exhibits to the board, they netted that out. They said, well, to the extent that we exempted these costs as costs of pollution control equipment, and we admit that they're overhead costs of pollution control equipment, we don't need to take them out as drawing costs. But if they aren't indirect or overhead costs of pollution control equipment, then we think the board should not view them as costs of energy production equipment.
Thank you.
No sense.
Maybe Mr. Sauer, we're having trouble, at least I am, with the procedure, and you can quickly help with that, and as Judge Harsh has tried to put it in some context on specifics here. Your summation, conclusion, in your brief says you want the decision of the BTA reversed. You want us to reverse the BTA's decision on the intangibles?
Yes.
I thought they said that was not deductible.
Pardon?
I thought they found that should not be excluded and held for the state in that case.
No, there are three categories that they considered. What was called costs that the paint had contributed to drawings that were in fact part of the capital.
Okay, start with the drawings. The BTA said that the drawings
right. Could
in fact be deducted. Okay.
Then there was a second category that they characterized as intangible assets.
All right, let's stop with the drawings. You want us to reverse that?
Yes.
Okay.
The second category was what Duquesne classified or labeled intangibles.
Intangible.
And those were other overhead or distributable costs, again admitted in the board's decision that they had been booked to the production.
And what did the BTA do with that?
They allowed that. What you're alluding to is the third category, the non-value-added, or what they call non-tangible, tangible personal property.
The intangibles, right.
Well, that and the intangibles were really, at one point in time, part of a larger group. They segregated them out and put them as two categories. They felt that they could more clearly identify the intangibles, in other words, training, certain testing costs that were incurred in the course of qualifying this equipment and the plant for approval for operation. Those costs, they characterized as intangible costs, and they said these costs don't directly result in the production of or acquisition of tangible property. However, they indirectly did because they were included, they were booked by the machine itself as part of the distribution. distributable fund allocated to these annual deductions.
Let's do an easier one, the retirement units. What did the board do with the retirement units?
The retirement units is a different issue. Those are specific items of tangible property. Again, and they claim, essentially with the retirement units, it distinguishes between retirement units and retired units.
Yeah, I got it.
Retired units are retirement units, valves, piping, that type of thing, to which both direct and indirect costs have been both capitalized.
But the BTA ruled for the taxpayer
right.
in that.
On now, those units...
You want us to reverse that?
Yeah, for a different reason. Not because the cost of... For that, the board didn't determine whether the aggregate costs were in fact an overstatement. They... The guts of that issue is that they claim these specific units had been removed prior to tax lifting day, but because of a delay in getting their final cost report, they had never taken them off so that they had erroneously reported them. Our only issue with that, with the board's review of it, is that the accountant that they hired to do the analysis of this admitted that many of these retirements of units were one-on-one replacements. In other words, if a valve goes out, you have to put another valve back in there. And he couldn't say that they had added in the cost of the replacement. That was our concern with that part.
Is there any part of the BTA decision with which you agree, that you like?
Yeah, the fourth category, and that was NPP, non-intangible personal property, which was a variation of the intangibles claim, and even the board could stomach the claim on that. It says what they were, those were claims where they just reworked. This construction ran from 1974 to 1987. It overlapped the time of Three Mile Island and an admitted explosion of regulation by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. As a result of that, there was much of some redesign work, quite a bit of changes in design.
Yeah.
Sometimes they had to add. Their claim was hindsight tells us that if we had known all of this at the beginning, we could have avoided a lot of these costs. The reality of it is that they incurred the cost. Duquesne went to a public utilities commission in Pennsylvania, got them approved as necessary and proper, booked them as cost, capitalized cost of production equipment, and now wants to say, well, we really want to look at what we could have built this.
Yeah, but at best, that had to be a hit-and-miss proposition. And it took 13 years to construct this, and every 3 months down came another change order. So how can you attribute that to the taxpayer? I mean, taxpayer, let's assume the taxpayer, this is a taxpayer that's in good faith. They did their best. You want to stick it to them for their proper estimates.
What they did, though, was after they got approval of all this, after they booked it, then, was only after, and this is back to your timetable, you were talking about Justice Piper, was only after all of these costs had been incurred, all of these costs had been booked, production equipment account, the General Assembly, knowing all of that, still said cost is capitalized on your books and records as a starting point for the valuation.
This would have necessitated some amendment of their federal tax returns, would it not? The additional discovery of the additional expenses and all.
I don't think.
Well, what if, in fact, they amended their federal tax returns to reflect the true facts? Would not our tax commissioner and the state be bound by that?
If they had booked, if there had been a set of accounts showing costs have been capitalized in a certain way, if they had written it off, as some of their Ohio partners did when costs were reduced.
And that's what I want to come to is my last question. This is, Duquesne, as I read this, owns what, 9 point, or did own?
13.7%.
All right. Are the other 87% or 85% of this floating around someplace in a tax case?
Oh, yes. That's $1.5 billion.
So really what we're doing is scratching the surface. We're scratching the surface in this case.
Correct. And the fact is, everybody knew going into this that these were their capitalized costs. Utilities got exactly what they wanted in 1988. They got 50% reduction of that cost as a starting point in valuing it for taxation. The tax commissioner complied with it. The schools adjusted their budget. And the General Assembly was very aware that the schools were in reliance on that because they knew, and they had to make special provisions in the fall of 88, for schools which had yanked levies from their ballot in anticipation of being able to get taxed based on the 95% valuation. This November legislation in 1988 caught them off guard, so the General Assembly had to make provisions for that. The schools relied on it. The school system had faith with the general. The tax commissioner had applied it to the world. They came out after the fact and started arguing that now we need more. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sauer.
He's good. He's on the stage. He has his stuff back into the air.
Please, the court. With me this morning is my co-counsel, Todd Swanford. The commissioner's primary argument here is fiscal impact. This cannot be the basis of a decision by this court in a settled area of tax law that is applicable to every taxpayer in Ohio, business or public utility.
Counsel, what did you capitalize?
What FERC required, and this court has said, both in the Hatchadorian case and twice in the United Telephone case, that FERC accounting does not supplant or take the place of the Ohio tax code.
So
it is, in fact, definitional.
Okay, you did capitalize, though, I think.
We have the owners of the Pyramid Lithium Power Plant, Duquesne, being a minority owner, were required by federal law and federal regulations to capitalize certain costs.
Okay.
That is not determinative.
Okay.
Chapter 5727 of the Ohio Revised Code.
It capitalized all the items in dispute here.
Yes, of course. As required by federal law.
And then this new statute came along.
Not a new statute. This is a disingenuous argument of the commissioner. The commissioner knows, and the Hatchadorian decision by this court says, 50% depreciation has always been the rule for public utility taxpayers in Ohio. It was uncodified before. It was an administrative rule that did not appear either in the Ohio statute or in the Ohio Administrative Code or in any other published regulation. The Cuyahoga County Auditor challenged that and said that was inappropriate. This court in Hatchadorian affirmed and confirmed the so-called 50% rule. All that happened post-Hatchadorian, this court's decision, was to put the 50% valuation depreciation rule into code. It didn't change anything.
So that would be a new statute, but not a new law.
Not a new concept. And it is simply depreciation. And the statute itself, for this court to accept the commissioner's argument, this court must read out of the statute the word taxable and tangible. The statute says, 5727.06 says, this rule applies to taxable, tangible personal property. So if property is intangible, as we prevail below at a certain class of claims for services and for properties otherwise not tangible and not taxable, like engineering drawings, it simply never goes into the tax base.
So this it would not be property as capitalized on the company's books.
That is correct. Federal law, federal energy law, and the very complicated code of regulations, which was testified to as Board of Tax Appeals, says when you are regulated by us in Washington, here's what you capitalize and here's how you do it.
So, how many different ways does your client account for these now? How many different sets of?
One.
Just one.
One.
And
just
there one. It's called a capital asset.
It's FERC account, your plant accounts.
So from that standpoint, it's called a capital asset. And that would also be used in terms of rate making before the Public Utilities Commission.
That's not a rate-making case. This court has said in United Telecom twice that what they do down the street at PUCO is not what's done in the tax department. And in fact, the tax department has never itself, either in the tax return or in any administrative proceedings, adopted PUCO law. The disingenuous of this argument is really illustrated by counsel's answers to a couple of questions. So the statute says, and the commissioner in this case settled this issue with Duquesne Light Company, that something called AFUDC, allowance for funds used during construction, interest, simply never goes into the tax base. That is also in 572706 of the revised code. That is a FERC account. You can go to any regulated public utility around the country, you will see an allowance for funds used during construction. The commissioner agrees, and the commissioner agrees specifically, as noted by the Board of Tax Appeals in this case, that AFUC does not go into the tax base. It's in the FERC account. The other one that the commissioner really has agreed with us is pollution control as a matter of definition. In other places in the revised code, 5709.21 and 6111, exclude by definition pollution control equipment from the tax base.
How can you do that since those tax years were already closed? How can you reopen them?
Because the statute says, because 5709.25.24 simply say the property is exempt from all taxation by the state of Ohio from either the date that the application is made, in this case October 1974, or the date the certificate, the piece of paper comes out, whichever is first, so that this pollution control equipment, as purchased, as installed, and finally as used in the nuclear power plant, has always been tax exempt. The problem here is that the tax commissioner treats business taxpayers in exactly the same context differently than the public utility here, Duquesne Light Company. With respect to the closed tax year argument, which the commissioner has made, the evidence and the testimony in this record, which the Board of Tax Appeals reviewed and accepted, was that for general business taxpayers in exactly the same circumstances, those statutes apply to both general businesses, manufacturers, as they do to public utilities. The commissioner allows this retroactive application because the statutes conflict. The administrator of the division testified to that, and in fact, the general business tax returns promulgated by the taxpayer say that. May I go back to fiscal impact? Because
let me interrupt you for a second before I do that and ask you a question about this retroactivity.
Yes.
Isn't it true that it's often possible to lose substantive rights by not complying with procedural prerequisites?
Absolutely.
And in this case, if you allow the tax year to close, haven't you allowed the procedural prerequisite to cut you off?
No, because the statute, as crafted by the General Assembly, these are really not hard statutes. The statute says, shall be exempt.
A substantive right. And procedurally, to take advantage of that substantive right, you follow the procedure to require a reassessment. Keep the tax year open?
Not here. Because the statute says shall be exempt from the date of application. When that document is filed with the tax department for processing by it and OEPA, you have a tax exemption. It does not say, and you then, to be real sure you've got this exemption, even though the statute says you, to be really sure, you must on an annual basis file another piece of paper. The statute goes on, although it is not applicable in this context, but it's instructive because the statute also says this property, as it is purchased all along, is never subject to sales tax, it is never subject to the imposition of other property taxes, and for franchise taxpayers, it doesn't go into tax base. In none of those contexts does the statute say, and you must file.
Well, what cuts off the substantive right to go back retroactively to 20 years with an amended certificate and reopen the tax year.
What, because the taxpayer, because the code does not say that the taxpayer must do so. In every other area of the Ohio Revised Code, it is clear that if the commissioner takes action or doesn't take action, there is a timeline. There is a 30-day or not later than such and such a date. Not in the pollution control statute. The Board of Tax Appeals reconcile these on the basis of public policy. That the Ohio General Assembly, when it passed those statutes for general business taxpayers and for public utilities, knew what it was doing.
So there's no concept of finality in these in this area. That's a concept we throw out.
It isn't as troublesome. If you are talking about a general business taxpayer who's going to build a plant or an extension of a plant, who's really going to do it in a year or two, what is particularly unique here is the plant construction here started in 1974. The plant went online in November of 1987. It was simply not humanly possible to do the cost accounting. The testimony of the Board of Tax Appeals was that the so-called final cost report of 1993 took 50 person years to compile. So in this circumstance, there is finality. As soon as the final cost report came out, the owners of the plants put in the real numbers, and the tax department denied them. The Board of Tax Appeals said, no, you can't do that, because the statute gives an absolute right to relief.
Your position is, as I understand, at least with the pollution control equipment, that it never was subject to tax. It was exempt from the beginning, but didn't you include it as a taxable item? You paid,
no, to the extent that
you paid tax?
The original certificate was issued in 1988 based on the costs that were known at the time. That property never bore the tax burden. It never went into the return. It was never part of the tax base. There was this time lag from 1988 when the plant went on loan.
Yes.
87, kind of taxable in 88, and Mr. Sauer indicated, in 1993 when the report came out. So when the report came out and the final numbers were known, an amended and superseding application.
Yeah, but you included it then, did you not?
Well, we included it because they put it in.
I think what Judge Harsh is getting at, and it bothers me too, that if you include it and now come back at the 11th hour and say, oh, we've had this deathbed conversion, we've read the statute, and it should never have been in there in the first place, therefore we get all this money back.
Not here, Your Honor, not here. That is not the set of facts that is here before you, and that is not the determination made by the Board of Tax Appeals. The court, because these are fiscal impact questions, the General Assembly has dealt with these issues. The General Assembly dealt with the issues first many years ago when it gave the county auditors, in these circumstances, the ability to decide on a county-by-county basis over 5 years what to do about refunds or credit. The county auditors have the absolute discretion to credit future years' tax liability over a five-year period, or refund, or do a combination of both. More recently,
in order to lessen the impact.
In order to phase in the impact.
Yes.
To phase in, to give equal protection to taxpayers based on the settled tax law of the state. More recently, the General Assembly, in the so-called deregulation bill, passed 4928.35b, not a tax statute, but a statute that said, in essence, first of all, that the commissioner should try to settle these cases, and secondarily, if public utilities gain refunds, they are required to report to the PUCO so that rate relief may be given to the Ohio consumer. So this is not money that's going to go into the net tax base or the net income tax base, which I think you were alluding to.
Yes. And the settlement issue, there is much in the BTA's opinion with which you agree. Had the state not appealed, the tax commissioner not appealed, would you have appealed?
Yes, on the non-tangible personal property and the equal protection case.
Doesn't that then, if you would have appealed that, doesn't that open up the whole case? Because these things are inextricably intertwined.
No, there's a definition for each of these items. Engineering drawings stands on its own, as this court has decided over the course of the last almost 55 years. This court has always sustained 570103, engineering drawings are not subject to tax.
And that seems to be very clear in the statute. How do you respond to Mr. Sauer's argument with regard to that?
I think Mr. Sauer's argument is what we...
Other than being disingenuous.
Well, it's a one-size-fits-all argument. It's an easy argument to make to ignore the entire Ohio tax code, to ignore this court's jurisprudence on these statutes. This court's going to have to overrule a whole lot of case law to get where the commissioner wants the court to get. The court has said that this is a property tax case, so what goes into the base first must be examined by the definitions generally applicable to businesses and to public utilities, and then once the property goes into the tax base, make a valuation determination. There isn't one word of testimony in this case about valuation or appraisal. This court has heard lots of valuation and appraisal cases over the years. You put appraisers on the stand, they talk about valuation. That's not what this case is about. This case is about equal application of existing law. May I say that on this record, this taxpayer with minority interest in power plant has a range of tax liability in question of somewhere between $8 and $10 million. This case, this is not either $1.1 billion, which is where Mr. Sauer started his argument, or concluded at $1.5 billion. This is not an insubstantial sum of money. $8 to $10 million. This is not a $1 billion case. With respect to the equal protection claim.
Before you do that, let me interrupt you again, please. And ask you once more about the drawings. And I know you say the rate case and the tax case aren't related in any way, shape, or form, but I'm interested in knowing if, when you make your rate application, if the drawings are part of your rate base and if they're estimated in that procedure.
Your Honor, that issue is not in this record of this taxpayer. Duquesne Light Company is based in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and was regulated by the PAPUC. Pennsylvania has deregulated. Duquesne Light Company was not subject to regulation here in the state of Ohio. The power that it purchased as a minority owner in this power plant, which used to service Pennsylvania customers, there's simply no evidence of record on that issue. The only evidence of record has to do with the disparate valuation which the commission has placed on the plan. We have a chart at page 54 of our brief that I think summarizes in written form the argument there. This court has said in property tax cases, the tax commissioner is required to value the same item of property in the same way. That is the Booth financial case, from which the court has never retreated over the years. In this circumstance, and of course the Board of Tax Appeals did not reach this because it is a constitutional claim, this taxpayer owns 13.74% of the Perry Nuclear Power Plant. It is paying tax as if it were a 21% owner. That is the disparate treatment of the taxpayer's interest in Perry Nuclear Power Plant, which comes to this court de novo, as it must from the Board of Tax Appeals. Here, and finally, we urge the court to affirm the Board of Tax Appeals, save and the TPP issue. This case, the trial of this case before the Ohio Board of Tax Appeals was unprecedented. It took over 3 weeks. Duquesne Light Company produced 18 witnesses. There are 2,300 pages of transcripts, 137 voluminous exhibits. National accounting firm of Coopers & Lybrand reviewed all the documentation. Individual witnesses spent literally thousands of hours. The lead witness on the engineering drawing and calculation testified that he spent over 2,000 hours working on his testimony. the principal Cooper's Library and spokesperson testified that he spent over 3,000 hours. The commissioner had no witnesses, not one. The commissioner had one substantive exhibit, some of the legislative history that was just thrown in at the end of the case. The
commissioner says it doesn't need it. All it needs is the law.
Well,
in subsection E,
Well, we're not at the Federal Power Commission or the FERC.
All right, let's do one more specific, because the one that bothers me the most is the intangibles issue. That is, and for an easy example, take the person who came in and started up the nuclear reactor services. You capitalized all those costs on your books. And the statute says if it's capitalized by a public utility, then it's taxable.
No, the statute says taxable, tangible. Taxable, tangible. Cookies and punch at the Perry plant for community open houses are not items that went into the base. Fire trucks and fire equipment and emergency training services that were given away to the surrounding community members are not in the Ohio property tax base. The FERC accounting treatment of that does not govern.
But all the costs.
That result, of course, got overruled. Patrick Dorian and United Telephone won and United Telephone.
No, you really don't if you had the issue of you capitalizing them. You took all of those intangibles, miscellaneous expenses, threw them all into the cost, and capitalized them, did you not?
Your Honor, the answer to that is you alluded to the federal income tax code. Every person in this room receives gross income, a paycheck, dividends, interest. Some of it is taxable, some of it is not, depending upon the intricacies of the federal income tax code. This court just last week issued a decision in a personal income tax case with respect to non-resident shareholders. It is not enough, it is insufficient to say, well, you put it on your books per...
Okay, let's just stop there then. You did put it on your books. If you don't like my term capitalization, you took all of these costs, whatever they might be, and they ended up on the books capitalized as cost of the Perry nuclear plant, didn't they?
In total compliance with federal law.
But they did. Okay.
And
now, doesn't the statute...
5727 says nowhere, and you, public utility, must go to your books and put what's on your books into the tax return. The commissioner... Even the commissioners could agree to that because the commissioner's tax return in this case will show you that the commissioner instructs every public utility to take out pollution control equipment, take out real estate costs, which is capitalized on the books, and take out AFUDC. There are deducts that every taxpayer or public utility is permitted even when they are on the books. They're just not the same thing.
Okay, then let's go to an easier one then that we won't have to. Well, that's why I'm saying easier. Well, I want to get you right down to the issue. The costs of permits, for instance, they're always extensive in the nuclear plants. You want to exclude the costs of the licensing, although they were included in your capitalized costs. Doesn't the FERC say that they're included as part of the capitalization and the costs?
Certain licensing costs are in the tax base. There
okay.
are limited intangibles claims made. For example, we were required to purchase but not keep, if they weren't there on tax lien day, tax listing day, certain Nuclear Regulatory Commission, NRC bulletin. The Board of Tax Appeals said, we look at this and we see that this is different than other licensing. The Board of Tax Appeals took a lot of testimony on these so-called intangibles and determined very carefully, category by category, which costs did not represent tangible personal property utilized in business on tax lien date at the Perry Nuclear Power Plant. This wasn't the home run argument or the one-size-fits-all argument that the Commission is trying to make this court adopt, 5727-11 argument. This was a excruciating march through invoices tied in to what intangibles or services were purchased at Perry and Ware House.
You didn't go through those 350,000 drawings and 250 additions, did you?
Yes, certainly. The witnesses did.
It would take 3,000 hours.
More than that. There was a lot of work here.
Counsel, your red light's on. Just briefly respond to something you raised.
But you do have to bring that.
You gained 13.74% owner. I don't know if you did a start or not, but you said for cash purposes, they're being treated as if they had 20.1%. Explain that.
What the commissioners did when the PUCO in Ohio ordered the Ohio utility partners to write off certain costs incurred in the construction, the $3.5 billion spent to construct the plant, the Ohio partners put those written off, or continued to keep those written off costs in the tax base. When they did the return, they put them in. Commissioner called in the Ohio partners and said, no, PUCO ordered those to come out of the rate base, so they come out of the tax base. So the commissioner reduced the overall valuation, the final bottom line number on the tax return of the Ohio-based partners.
You told me in no uncertain terms that there is no nexus between how things are treated in the Public Utilities Commission and how they're treated in the bank. Here, obviously, there was a direct nexus, and there was a reduction based on what was knocked out of the rate base.
That was the commissioner's action. That was not, it was a write-off determination, not FERC accounting, plant account 322, plant account 323, 325. The commissioner said, hey, look, you were ordered by the PUCO to take these costs and write them off. They didn't go into rate base. They don't go into taxes. With respect to Duquesne Light Company, unregulated by the PUCO, regulated by the PAPUC, is our contention under the Equal Protection Clause, in this case, court's jurisprudence and Booty Financial, that we have the same thing that's being taxed, and there are disparate values the commissioner must equalize.
Wouldn't you have to go to the Pennsylvania Authority and get the adjustment made by that regulatory body before you could claim that the action was a result of the state of Ohio? I mean, if in fact you had a same reduction or ordering a removal of these costs from the rate base and from the accounting base, then Ohio went ahead and taxed you at a different rate, maybe a problem. But it wasn't Ohio that said, these stay in your rate base.
Well, it's a welcome stranger theory of taxation. I mean, the U.S. Supreme Court has spoken to that. You have spoken to it, and you said what you have said is that when the sovereign state taxes the property, it doesn't matter with respect to the ownership or the outside control. It's what happens in Columbus, Ohio, not Harrisburg, PA. And that's what the financial sector. Same kind of equipment taxed differently in the hands of the manufacturer than the reseller, and this court has said you simply can't do that. Classification in that way is impermissible under the Equal Protection Clause.
Thank you. Thank you, Scott. Mr. Sauer, you've used your time to take a minute.
There's no different standard applied to Kane than that applied to its Ohio partners. Capitalized partners standard used for everyone in this. In fact, the testimony of Duquesne's own witnesses indicated that none of the utilities wanted to push down their costs because pushing them down the costs on the books reflected the fact that they weren't earning money on those costs. The costs have been denied as a part of their rate base. Duquesne's own controller wouldn't have pushed them down, said he wouldn't have pushed them down. Fact is, the capitalized costs simply reflect what they can earn on their investment. General Assembly used that. Tax Commissioner did not make them do anything. Tax Commissioner didn't ignore the statute. He simply complied with the statute. The statute has a very reasonable basis. It goes into the capitalized cost that the company puts on, reflective of what they can earn on their investment.
Sorry, let's go back to the specifics again. While I was concerned with Ms. Gall about the intangibles with regard to your case, I'm concerned about the drawings and the pollution control equipment. And I'd like to hear your best argument on why that statute doesn't exempt drawings. It seems so clear to me.
The statute doesn't undertake to exempt or tax drawings. The statute only undertakes to prescribe how other property, namely taxable production equipment,
yes,
be valued.
Yes.
That's all it undertakes to do. And it says, in doing that, tax commissioner, you must take the cost of that taxable production equipment as set forth on the company's books and use that as a starting point. That's all it says. That's all the tax commissioner did. In this case, with all these estimates that were brought in, they've never proved that $1 of this capitalized cost was capitalized cost of anything other than the taxable production equipment.
So you just assume, or not assume, I guess you're taking it from the record, that they have not made the case that they've paid tax on the drawings.
No. The drawings were never, they were never required to report drawings. They were never required to report costs of drawings. They were required only to report the taxable, or the capitalized cost of taxable equipment. That's what they did. Now, the issue that arose, they say some of these costs that we reported, which are in fact part of our capitalized cost of taxable equipment, were perhaps improperly capitalized.
That's the point, yes.
Else.
And let's assume they were.
Books to show that.
Well, let's
in fact, from the time they started raising this, not in their report, this drawing issue, not in their report, but later during petition for reassessment, the amount they were estimating changed from $96 million in December of 93 down to $30 million in March of 94, back up to $96 million at the time of the commissioner's final order, when they refused to provide any additional information or records, down to $33 million in September of 95 in response to another interrogatory, back up to $50 million in April of 96, a month before the hearing, finally settling at $23 million in the final exhibit they submitted. What is the tax commissioner supposed to do?
Are you indicating
4 years later, they're still estimating.
Are you indicating that it's your belief, or there isn't anything in record, that any of these drawings were included in the capitalized costs?
Right. There is no evidence,
okay,
that a single dollar,
right,
of this cost that,
yeah, yeah, okay,
was,
okay,
in fact,
you told,
capitalized cost.
I understand now. I understand that now. Now let's go to the pollution control equipment. How, when the statute seems to say the tax never attaches, can you argue that, well, it's too late, it's too bad they included it?
First off, I think it's interesting when Mr. Gall indicated that all these items of pollution control equipment have never really been taxed. What happened was that when the property came on, when the equipment was first put into use, in December of 1987, they filed an application for pollution control certificate and exemption. That application was granted the following October, based on the figures they provided. Now, the figures they provided were a result of them breaking out some of their distributable costs between pollution control equipment and other production equipment.
$150 million worth?
That's what they did. They gave the cost. So what happened is each year following that, they were allowed to pull out the cost that they were characterized in their books as cost of pollution control equipment. They reported what their books showed, not all basic estimates at the time, but they were the only figures that their books showed. During any of these years, they reported the cost of taxable production equipment. That is what it's assessed. And that's what they're seeking a refund of.
Yeah.
They're seeking to go back.
It was
based on the
brief. I think in your brief in the next page, I think I read that there was actually an accounting mistake, which the taxpayer seems to say was a estimating mistake, but apparently it was an accounting. Apparently somebody made a mistake in listing property as taxable that should have been actually part of the pollution control devices. So that is that. That's
there was
that.
One small item, and it cut through all of these electrical panels, but they were less than 1% of its increase. They were very small amounts. No, the bulk of this refund, this $45 million per year, 88 to 91, for order, is really based on a determination that the reported costs of taxable production equipment were overstated in those years as a result.
result of the way they estimated the breakout.
Well, well, the difference between this, and we're going to argue all this again in the next case, but the difference between this case and the next case procedure, as I understand it, is in this case, the taxpayer did say to the tax commissioner with a letter, we want a refund in writing. Next case, of course, they didn't do that. And your argument is the next case, well, there's no, nothing to appeal, no jurisdiction. But here, they did do that. The Court of Tax Appeals said that's sufficient to give us jurisdiction because there's something from which to appeal. And your argument here is that's not sufficient.
No, that was part of our objection to it. The context in which they tried to raise these refund claims was in objections to the 92 and 93 assessments. The tax commissioner only had authority to consider the assessments that were issued for those 3 years and therefore did not undertake to consider it. But it was in the appeal from those final determination of the 93 and 92 tax assessments, petitions for reassessment, that the Board of Tax Appeals says, well, we can use that as a vehicle for opening up earlier years assessment for 89 to 91.
Before you sit down, I'm interested in this issue that Kane was a very an unfair party, the tax burden that the tax commissioner called in the Ohio regulated utilities and said, look, the commission has made you write down the startup cost of this plant. And if I'm following that, essentially what they did is to say, okay, the shareholders are absorb part of this, and it's not going to be placed on the burden of the ratepayers. And so we're going to adjust your taxes accordingly.
Yeah.
That seems to be my understanding. First step, and that Duquesne, because it was not selling power in the cloud, wasn't a part of that process. My question is, whatever right you can explain that as well, are those the same assets that are in dispute here, or is that a broad brush across the board? We're just going to knock it up.
Thank you, Mr. Sauer. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.